So the question, Arishonim Shal, Arishonim, the early commentaries ask, Di Yosef Avar Chok HaMalchut Liot Nidrash Lo Shal of Shalo. He went against all rules, not only of etiquette, but of, you know, he spoke when he wasn't asked, he wasn't spoken. Ki Hinei Nidrash Liftor HaChalom, he was brought in to interpret the dream. V'kasher Hishlim HaPitron Yelech, he should leave. You interpret the dream, now you finish, thank you very much, leave. Malo liot etzot v'ata yirei Paro, what's this business of him giving aces to Paro of what to do? Lehiayetz lemelech, he had no business doing that, he wasn't asked to give his opinion of what to do. So that's the question. So he quotes here first from the first authority, Haravam b'shem Avi Abba, Avi, says, Shenitkaven Yosef lehochiach et amitat hapitron. He was attempting to prove the truthfulness, the reality of the dream, Asher Patar Leparo, which he interpreted, Vizesha Amarlo, and that's why he said to him, Pitron Asher Patarti Lecha, this interpretation that I gave you, Enos Fara, it's not just a pie in the sky theory, it's not theorem. V'lo hashara v'umad, it's not an assessment, maybe this will happen, perhaps, right? I'm giving you a scenario that it's a possibility. No. Ela pitron batuach. This is this dream, this interpretation is realistic, it's going to turn into reality. Sheroi sheteaseh alav ma'aseh v'tiponei bo kahogin. You have to do something about it. In other words, The dream is real and it's happening now, and he had to tell him what to do, because don't think it's just, you know, wait around and see, maybe it's going to happen. No, that's the first answer, okay? I'm not crazy about that answer either, okay? Second answer. Od katav b'shem Avram HaChassid, quotes the Ravan Zarishon, quotes somebody else. The ha-chemla v'harachmanut shel Yosef al ha'am. This is interesting, that Yosef felt compassion when he's interpreting the dream and he sees what's going to happen to the Egyptian populace. He felt rachmanus. He had mercy for the masses of people who are going to starve. Ze higia oto letaken takana shel chesed aleihem. He felt moved immediately. He couldn't hold himself back because of his tremendous sense of chesed and kindness that he had to, right? Aleihem b'tzara, that they're going to be in such tzaras, Asher Heim Omdim Lefaneh, which is about to come upon them, Lefi Shechshash Yosef Shema Lo Yit Oru Paro V'Zara V'Davrzeh. He was afraid Paro was not going to do anything. And he was really concerned. Right? V'al Yidei Kein Ya'avod Am, and he'd lose his people. People would die of starvation. Right? Kemo She'amar V'lo Tikarei Ta'aretz Perav. Right? It was a massive plague of poverty. So that's the second answer. Now here's the third answer. This is the answer that I find really is more in line with the pshat. At the end of the dream, it says Vayikatz Paro. Paro woke up, right? So he says like this, and he's quoting the Marash of Primo. Okay, Dichtiv Vayikatz Paro Vayishon Vayachalom Sheni. Paro woke up and he dreamt again. The intention of this verse is the betoch chalomo, in his dream, chalam shenitorer michalom v'yashan v'chalom sheni. He dreamt and he woke up, and he dreamt again. V'kol ze haya betoch chalom. This is all in the dream. So he has to interpret. What does it mean that he woke up? That also begs interpretation. That he woke up from the dream of the 7 years and the 7 years. Ulechen k'tiv achakach, therefore it reads afterwards, Vayikatz Paro v'hine chalom. And Paro woke up, and it was a dream. The tevat v'hine chalom yutar. That's extra. What do you mean? Vayikatz Paro, he woke up, and it was a dream. We know it was a dream, right? Uledarkenu hakavana, what does it mean? Vayikatz Paro ata be'emet. That he woke up, literally he woke up, v'hinei chalom, ma shehekitz b'tchilat hakol haya chalom. The first awakening was part of the dream. He awoke as part of the dream. V'yosef But Pietro, no, lo patara paratase. He didn't explain this. He's giving an interpretation of the dream, right? Seven cows, 7 years, another 7 years, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, 7 years of plenty. But how do you interpret, wake up, Paro, that Paro woke up? Oh, kalomar masha achalom shehikitz v'nitorer. Wake up, Paro has to wake up. Part of the awakening of Paro is to do something about the condition that he's predicting through the dream. That's part of the, it's part of the dream, the interpretation. And plus, what to do, the instructions of waking up. What do you do when you wake up from such a dream? You have to wake up. You have to do something about the dream. This is part of the interpretation of the dream, the whole plan. L'chein ata bo liftor pratzeh. Now he's coming to interpret this part of the dream that Paro awoken. Va'amar va'ata yirei Paro. Now Paro, listen. Kilomar ma shechalamta shenitoreri. That that you dreamed, that you woke up as a metaphor, woke up not only physically, but woke up, hey, what's going on here? I have to do something about it. Hapitron lahakitz nirdamim shehitorer v'tikatz mishnetcha lirot ish navon v'chacham. That's part of the interpretation. Wake up and find someone that's going to solve this problem, that's going to come and collect all the food together. This is a, I think this is a, this is to the point. This is really the center of the, it's a bullseye. Because it's part of the interpretation. If Yikatz Paro is part of the dream that he awoke in, then that has to be interpreted. So what's the interpretation? Wake up and do something. That he has to tell him what to do, right? So I think this is a very meaningful thing. You know, people dream about things, but you have to put the dream into reality now. Put the dream into reality. And that was part of the dream. That was part of the interpretation. Okay, let's leave two for last because that's Hanukkah. Let's go to three on the other side of the page. And this is from Rav Simcha Zisel Brody, who was the Rosh Hashiva of the Chevron Yeshiva. And he gave a shiur in Chumash Ramban on a regular basis. And this is from his writings. Kevayikra Yosef et Shem HaBachor. Now in the Parsha, Yosef has two sons born to him in Egypt. And the Torah tells us what their names are and why he gave them these names. Vayikra Yosef et Shem HaBachor, and Yosef called the name of his firstborn son Menashe. Why? Ki nashani Elokim et kol amalai. God caused me to forget all of my travels, my travails, my problems. Vet kol beit avi, and he caused me for so many years. He was away from home. So he thanked God that he allowed him, Menashe is a word that means to forget my father's home, to forget Yaakov. Ve'et Shem Hasheni, the second name, Kara Ephraim. He called his second son Ephraim. Ki Hifrani Elokim, Be'eretz Onyi. Because God made me, Hifrani means from the word pre, he made me fruitful in a strange country, right? So he's going to ask an obvious question here. Inyan Hashem Shenatan Yosef Livno Menashe L'Ka'orach Tamua Ma'od. This name that he gave his firstborn son is very strange. He gives a name to his son, Menashe, thank God that you allowed me to forget my father's home. Right? Bishna Makashe Kara Livno Ephraim, that he named his second son Ephraim, Muvana Davar Biyote, that makes sense, right? Ki achein zehu shem hamifta et zichron hanisim hagdolim va'atzulim. This is a name that is mindful of the great miracles that took place for him. She'iru lo b'mitzrayim, that happened for him in Egypt. U'kimivuar b'pasuk, as the Torah tells us. Ach likreit Hashem Menashe livno b'choro, but to call his firstborn son Menashe l'chura ein pesher ha'vezber. How do we explain this? He's naming his son after the thank God you allowed me to forget my troubles and to forget my father's house. What does it mean? Adarabba, just the opposite.
Good morning, I'm well.
Hasiba hamuvueret b'Torah, the reason brought into the Torah, ki nashani Elokim et kol amaliv et kol beit avi, hayinu sheshachach et beit avi, he forgot his father's house, v'shachach et amalosha, mufla, this is a wonder. Ve'inenu muvenet, klal v'klal. Why would he want to forget his father's house? Hare beito shel Yaakov avinu, the house of his father Yaakov, demut ha'adam, shebe'mekava was a spiritual home. It was a spiritual environment. Yaakov Avinu, his father, Yisrael. Hayabeh bayit she'ein lanu ketza shel musag berama alotov v'gulotov. We don't have the tip of the iceberg of an understanding of the sanctity, the holiness that took place in the house of Yaakov Avinu, in the house of Jacob. Ubebayit zeh amal Yosef. In that house, Yaakov Yosef study Torah, v'kibel ma'aviv, et kol ha-Torah shalamad v'beit midrashan shoshem v'ever. He learned with his father so much Torah in that house. It was a holy house. V'eich ya'aleh al-adad, shikharei livno b'choro shem ha-mivta, shemacha simcha v'hoda al sheshachach et beit aviv amon. How does he name his son, you know, the joy, thank God I forgot my father's house. Hard to understand. He should be in pain. The logvul, without any borders or boundaries. Shazav et beit aviv, that he left his father's house. Vizut miyag gedolam. This is a great question, right? And it is. So now he's going. I cut out. This is a little bit longer. So he brings a from our oral tradition. This is in the Talmud. It's a Gemara in Baba Basra. Rabbi Zera Kisalik la'arad Yisrael. Rabbi Zera was a student in Babylonia, in the Babylonian schools. And he left the yeshiva in Babylonia to go study with Rav Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel. Now there's a completely different methodology of studying in Babylonia, in Bavel, to the study in Eretz Yisrael. So here's what Rabbi Zera says. Kisalik la'arad Yisrael. When he left Eretz Yisrael, actually I'm sorry, he left Eretz Yisrael to go study in Bavel, right? Kisalik la'arad Yisrael, yasiv meya ta'anisa. He fasted 100 days. The lishtakeach gemara bavlo mine. Right? He's going to Eretz Yisrael, and he fasted 100 days in order to forget the Babylonian Talmud that he studied. It's very strange. What do you mean? He spent his life, half his lifetime, learning Gemara, and he now fasts 100 days so he should forget his study of the Babylonian Talmud. So that it shouldn't hold him back. It shouldn't hold him down. What does that mean? Pirish Rashi. Rashi explains. Shekesha Allah le'Eretz Yisrael. When he went to Eretz Yisrael, mi Bavel from Babylonia, Lumon Torah, mi Pi Reb Yochanan, to study Torah from Yochanan, some Me'etanios, he fasted 100 days. Kidei sheyishkach et derech halimud shebishas Bavel. Because he wanted to forget the approach to study in Babylonia. Mipnei shebe'Eretz Yisrael, In Bavel, I'll just put it in my own words first. In Babylonia, there was tremendous to and fro argument. It was an argumentative process where they asked questions and they answered and they challenged each other. That was the approach in Babylonia. In Eretz Yisrael, the approach was to hear a shir and to sweetly listen to it and to let it and to digest it. So this is what was going on. He didn't want to be held down by his approach in Babylonia to interrupt constantly the Jerusalem scholars and hold back the study session. So he explained it. In Eretz Yisrael, it was not an argumentative approach to studying Torah. They were agreeable to each other in their learning. Keshemen, like oil, the smoothness of oil. Umiyashvin et ta'ameyen, below kushiyat upirukim. There are no questions and answers. It was a whole different approach. It's a whole different approach of learning. Vahainu, in other words, shekedei liklot v'lisfug heitev Torah Eretz Yisrael, in order to digest and ingest and sponge in the Torah of Eretz Yisrael, yada Rabbi Zera, the rabbi knew she'alav lehipalel, he had a daven ulevakesh, and to request lishkoach et Torah Bavel, to forget the Babylonian approach. Veina kavona, it doesn't mean chas v'sholom lishkoach mamish, to actually forget. El hadchik et halimud shalamad b'bavel, but to put the learning of Bavel in the back, on the back burner, so it shouldn't confuse him with his approach to studying in the Jerusalem school. Ki zehu tivo shel adam, this is the nature of a person. Shekashe alav lehitraglut lematzavim chadashim. We all know this. It's very hard to adopt to a new setting, to a new approach. You know, we are creatures of habit. We get into a habit, right? This is a challenge for people who make Aliyah. You know, you get into certain habits, and this country, you know, as great as it is and as holy as it is, runs, you know, to the tune of a different, what is it, but a different drummer, right? Marches to the tune of a different drummer, completely. And you have to get used to it, you know? You want to go to the post office? You know, it's a throw of the dice if it's going to be open by the time you get there, right? Or just close it, right? So that's the nature. We are hard pressed to change. And to approach it, studying Torah from a totally different perspective, a different methodology, that we're so accustomed to half of our life. So here, halfway through his life as a student, he's now going to Eretz Yisrael and he has to adopt a completely different approach. Therefore, some Rabbi Zeir Meir Tanya. So he fasted 100 fasts. Uvihit palel, and he daven kadesh yuchal lihit maser lelimud Torah Eretz Yisrael, so that he could smoothly get into the Israeli approach, the Jerusalem approach. Ki hechi delo mitarde, so it's Shas Bavli. So the Shas Bavli shouldn't hold him down. So maybe a person's going to make Aliyah, should fast 100 days in order to prepare himself. Well, he certainly has to work on himself on certain midot and midas before he comes here and get prepared for the Israeli mentality. That's for sure. Okay, so now he's going to answer his question about the name that he gave for Menashe. We were troubled. Forget my father's house, right? Now, Zeu Abihu, this is the explanation. B'shem Shenatan Yosef Livno Menashe. To the name that Yosef gave to his son, Menashe. Forgetful. Forgetting. Ki nashani Elokim et kol amali et kol beit avi. God, in his mercy, allowed me to forget my pay, my struggles in my father's house. Yosef HaTzadik, shegadal v'nitchanech b'beit Yaakov Avinu. Yosef HaTzadik, who was raised and educated in the house of Yaakov, b'derech chayim toharah v'nizkaveh. He was raised in a pure atmosphere, in an ivory tower kind of an atmosphere of Torah Lishma, of learning Torah without any external problems, right? From the ivory tower of learning Torah with Yosef, unencumbered by the problems surrounding him. Nidrash l'kochot nefesh gedolim v'ta'atzumot ruach kbirot l'histagel l'tanayim achadashim l'limud v'kiyum ha'torah shenitavu asher yorad l'mitzrayim. He's got to learn Torah in Egypt now. The worst culture in the world now. He has to adopt his Torah to a negative society, to an immoral society. He's got to concentrate now on Torah from a totally different perspective. How do I apply Torah to this world, which is anti-Torah values in Egypt? Hein kadam prati, one man, who kishahaya bebeit hasurim, here he was in jail. Vehein achakach, kasher nitmaneh lemishna lemelech, Mitzrayim, and then he's appointed to be the prime minister of Egypt. And he's given this massive responsibility to rule the entire country of Egypt. Clearly, he had to conduct himself according to Torah totally differently than he did in his father's house. Different halachas, different shilas. So he couldn't be encumbered by the Torah that he learned by Yaakov. He had to now learn a new set of laws, a new set of Torah, a new set of principles, how to weave through the streets of Mitzrayim, both literally and figuratively. Sharelo Ri HaTorah Shalamad Beveit Yaakov, the Torah that he learned in the house of Yaakov, Bikidushav Dara, in the ivory tower of Yaakov Avinu's house, Kiri HaTorah Shalamad Mitzrayim, is totally not comparable to the Torah that he had to learn in Mitzrayim, HaMeshukat B'tumah V'gilulim, which was surrounded by idol worship and all kinds of impurity. U'mishukat, and therefore, Lahatim et atzmo l'matzav hachadash, in order to acclimate himself to the new situation of Egypt, in Egyptian life. b'mitzrayim, nidrishulo gadlut nefesh. He required and attained greatness of spirit, rochav lev, a tremendous expansion of his heart, v'go'onut, and genius, machshava v'novat mashlimut iloit, genius. He had a whole new approach to things through his genius. V'ilulei hachesed ha'atzum shezacha me'et Hashem yitbarach, and because of the grace and love that God bestowed on him, lihitkaber, to make it, u kaviyachol lishkoach, and so to speak, to forget at Torat Beit Yaakov Avinu, to forget that approach, to put it on the back burner, right? Like we say, a person, if you don't know somebody, respect, you meet someone for the first time, respect him like Rabbi Akiva, but suspect him like a robber. You don't know what you're coming into. So he put his Rabbi Akiva Torah on the back burner and had to deal now with the other approach of dealing with such a foreign society, right? So bo haya davuk b'chol nimei nafsho l'itragel l'limud haTorah b'Mitzrayim. He now had a focus. It's all about focusing on the new Torah of Eretz Mitzrayim. Ketzad hayachol lisrod b'Mitzrayim v'od lishlot l'ahel et kol ha'malchut. How's he going to deal with this? How's he going to deal with his job of controlling the Egyptian masses and the political environment of and the social environment, which was coming up because of the dreams? Mibli listot kimelo ha'neima. Kimali neima. He did not want to deviate one hair's breadth. Me'omek ha'Torah shekibel b'Beit Aviv. So that's what it means here. This was he was grateful that God allowed him to forget, in the sense to put aside the Torah from his father, but the implication is to allow him to learn this new approach in Egypt. Lechein, therefore, he concludes, Kasher zachava Allah davar biyado, when he made it in Egypt, Ke'edut ha'Torah, as the Torah tells us, V'yosef haya b'Mitzrayim, he was in Egypt, meaning, V'halahu banav hayu b'chlal shivim. What does the Torah have to tell us that he was in Mitzrayim? Ma bo'olam, who is this coming to teach us? Ki lo ayinu yodim shehu haya b'Mitzrayim. We know he was in Egypt. Elo lehodiecha. But this comes to teach you Yosef haya b'Mitzrayim. Lehodiecha tzidkato shel Yosef, the piety of Yosef. Hu Yosef haroeh tzon aviv, the same Yosef who ministered and fled, led his father's sheep. Hu Yosef shehaya b'Mitzrayim. V'naseh melech v'omeh b'tzidko. The same Yosef who was herding the sheep of his father was the prime minister of Egypt. He didn't change in his piety, in his frumkeit, in his commitment to Torah and mitzvahs. Who Yosef hayah b'Mitzrayim, that was Yosef. He didn't change. He didn't assimilate to Egyptian culture. Kava b'kriyat shmo shel. So at this point, he established in calling the name of his son, his Bechor, his firstborn Menashe, et hodah. This was really thankfulness to God. Gratitude to God, v'shevach, and praise, amukim, l'chaste HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the great chesed of Hashem, his love for him, imo, shesayei b'yado l'hatzliach l'umod l'shmor l'kayim et ha'Torah gam Mitzrayim, that he was allowed to be faithful to the Torah in Mitzrayim, right? By learning this new approach to Egyptian culture, and to apply Torah, his Torah principles, in Egypt, and survive. So that was the forgetting, was not the mamish chas v'shalom to forget his father, but to put it on the back burner, so to speak, so that he can achieve the greatness in Egypt. Okay, let's do two, because this is Hanukkah. Okay, this is from Rav Schwab, and he quotes a passage in our oral tradition. It's a Gemara in Shabbos, on Daf Chaf Aleph. Tana Rabbanan, mitzvat Hanukkah ner ish ubeito. The mitzvah of Hanukkah is one candle for each household. Hamahadrin, those who do it better, ner lekol echad ve'echad. One candle each night for everybody in the house. Hamahadrin min hamahadrin, if you go really hidur, to beautify plus times beautify, Beit Shammai omrim, so Beit Shammai, it's a difference of opinion. Beit Shammai says, Yom Rishon, the first night, madlik shmoni, you light eight candles. Mikan ve'elech pochet ve'olech. You do 8, 7, 6, etc. Ubeit Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel says, Yom Rishon madlik echad, the first night you light one. Mikan ve'elech mosif ve'olech. One, two, three, that's, we do Beis Hillel. We do Beis Hillel. And Amar Ula, the Ula said, Pligi Bo, Trey Amorai, Bimar Rava, rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, argued, Chad Amar, time with the Beis Shammai, you know, so they gave different reasons for Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. Okay? He's not going there. But what's fascinating about this is the only mitzvah that in other mitzvahs there's such a thing as Hidur mitzvah, to beautify the mitzvah, right? How do you fulfill Hidur mitzvah? Well, you light Shabbos candles. So you can light Shabbos candles with, you could carve out two potatoes and put the candles in two potatoes. But Hidur mitzvah, we buy a light, we buy a menorah, we buy a, you know, something. You want to be nicer, you get silver, right? Some gold, right? That's Hidur mitzvah, right? That's called Hidur mitzvah. Hidur mitzvah is generally with all mitzvahs. But here's the only mitzvah that we have that the halacha is mahadran times mahadran, beautifying times beautifying, right? You can really fulfill the mitzvah by lighting one candle each night. And in fact, if you're in trouble somewhere, I don't know where you might be, that you don't have candles, you have one candle, you can fulfill the mitzvah on the eighth night by lighting one candle. And you say the brachas, right? But really, the universal halacha is, what we have to try strive for, is this beauty times beauty, 1 to 8. So that's what he's going to deal with. The uniqueness of Hanukkah, that we have that, and there's something else unique, that generally speaking, the beautifying of a mitzvah is seen as an external factor to the mitzvah. It's not part of the mitzvah. Here, the beautifying times beautifying is the halacha, right? So let's see now how he puts it, and why. Why is that? Hine lo matzinu halachot v'dinim ba'ofen kiyum hidur mitzvah. You don't find halachas that